This podcast of the Radio Cafe comes to you via radiocafe.org, where you can find more information and many other podcasts. Technical support comes from Studio X, providing website design, hosting, e-commerce, and social media marketing, serving Santa Fe to the world since 1994. Find out more at studiox.com. I'm delighted now to welcome to the Radio Cafe Bernardo Ruiz. He is writer and director of the film Kingdom of Shadows, which will screen at 7 o'clock at the CCA this coming Saturday. It's part of the one-day film festival American Dreams Border Realities in honor of Somos Un Pueblo Unido's 20th anniversary. And Bernardo will be there. There will be a Q&A after the film. Welcome to the Radio Cafe.
Thanks so much for having me. I'm glad to be on the show.
This film is a really intense documentary, and it does an amazing job of looking at the drug war and the buildup and changes in the drug cartels, and in Mexico in particular over the last decade. So much has changed, and so rapidly. In Mexico, tens of thousands of people have vanished. They've been disappeared and killed, and Mexicans are living under a reign of terror. What's going on? How have we gotten to that point, and how did we get there so fast?
Well, I think that's one of the things that the film sets out to look at. It's one of the things that I was really interested in. I spent a lot of my career looking at, you know, the relationship between the U.S. and Mexico, and also looking at the kind of impact of the drug war on Mexico. I'd made a previous film called Reportero, or The Reporter, about journalists who cover organized crime and political corruption in Mexico. And so what I wanted to do with this film was to look at precisely how things have changed. There's always been organized crime in Mexico, but I wanted to see how we got to the point where you have such high impact violence, you have such a, you know, shockingly high homicide rate, you know, over 120,000 according to some people, and the current rate of disappearances, which is 26,000 according to official figures. And what I set out to do was to kind of bring it down to a very basic level and look at it through the stories of three people, just three people from different walks of life who've been impacted by this concept.
Let's talk about those three people and how you found them and selected them. They're an amazing group. There's a Department of Homeland Security agent called Oscar Hagelzieb, but despite his German name, he's very much son of Mexican immigrants.
That's right.
He was a spectacular undercover agent when he was younger. Then there's a nun named Sister Consuelo Morales, who's an activist working with the families of the disappeared. And then a Texas rancher named Don Ford, who was once a marijuana smuggler when it was a completely different landscape. How did you come across these people?
I have to say a big part of it was actually just being very lucky. Each one of the characters in the film kind of goes against the kind of stereotype that we have, I think, about people. Certainly when we meet Oscar in the film, so I think many people, he might look like a gang member or part of a biker gang. He's covered in tattoos, and we see him on his Harley. But in fact, he's a kind of high-ranking federal agent for Homeland Security. And I love that kind of contradiction. It's the same thing with Don Henry Ford. I think to a lot of people, he's kind of a classic American cowboy. You know, kind of looks like John Wayne in some ways. And yet he was a smuggler at the height of the Just Say No era, smuggling for the Juarez cartel. You know, even Sister Consuelo defies a certain stereotype. She's the third character. To the average person, I think she seems like this diminutive, quiet nun. But in fact, I would argue she's probably the bravest person in the film. She's someone who day to day pushes her local government, her state government, to do something about the disappearances of citizens of her city, Monterrey. And, you know, for doing that work, for looking for pushing the state government for justice, she's received death threats. And, you know, she's had to be very careful. And yet, at the same time, she continues to do this work day in and day out.
One can see the problem is not only the cartels, but the lack of effective response by the government. There's so much corruption and impunity, as the film points out in many ways. The police and soldiers are often part of the cartels, and those who are known killers are not punished. Maybe they're fired from their jobs, but they're walking around. And as a result, there's no confidence or very little confidence in these institutions, and the people are totally vulnerable and without protection. It's a very, very dark picture.
it is a very dark picture, and I think you've very accurately described the experience of many regions in Mexico. Obviously, that's not true of being the country as a whole, but there are entire pockets that many people would say are have been taken over by organized crime. But you know, you said the kind of the key word there, and that's impunity. There's such a small percentage of homicides in Mexico that are successfully prosecuted, and there is a real kind of pessimism in many corners of the country about effective rule of law. So you know, many human rights activists like Sister Consuelo, who you see in the film, are pushing their local governments to do what is right. But yes, the picture is bleak in many corners, and you know, I think there is a lot of fear and there's a lot of distrust of institutions. And I think the kind of most emblematic case in recent times has been the disappearance, abduction and disappearance of 43 students from the southern state of Guerrero, from a rural teachers college called Ayotzinapa. You know, we're just over a little year of that student disappearance, and there have been mass demonstrations here in Mexico, people clamoring for justice and pushing, in this case, the federal government for clarity about what happened to these 43 students. You know, another case very recently was the murder of a young photojournalist in Mexico City, which was long thought to be a kind of safe haven, along with three women, an activist, and two of their friends. It does paint a grim picture, but one of the things that the film tries to do is to show how interconnected the problem is and how it's not a quote-unquote Mexican problem, how it's really part of this bigger picture that you know, is connected to the United States. The U.S. and Mexico are so connected in many ways, you know, whether it's consumption on the U.S. side or in other ways. The picture is complex, and the U.S. plays a significant role in what's happening in Mexico as well.
Well, one thing that connects U.S. and Mexico is poverty, and poverty in both countries. And I was wondering if you could talk a little bit about how poverty and inequality give rise to the situation that you're depicting in this film. I mean, the U.S., we're consuming drugs. We're also part of the drug trade in a very big way.
That's right. And I really appreciate that question, because I think oftentimes in the U.S. and in many kind of corners of the media universe, we don't talk about the criminal distribution networks in the United States. And many of my Mexican colleagues, the journalists down here in Mexico, complain about the fact that, you know, they're doing very difficult reporting about organized crime in Mexico, and often receiving threats or being killed for the type of reporting they do. But it's not as if these caravans of illicit narcotics suddenly vanish when they enter U.S. territory. Clearly, there are criminal distribution networks within the United States. And, you know, who's doing the reporting on that? Who's doing the reporting on where these narco dollars are being banked? And so I think you're absolutely right that the kind of the key issue there, or at least part of the issue there, is poverty and inequality. Poor communities have always been ripe for exploitation from, you know, organized crime groups. And actually, Oscar Hagelsied, the federal agent in the film, says it at the very beginning of the film. You know, he grew up in circumstances where it was either get into the drug trade or get into some sort of law enforcement role. And you know, in his case, he chose law enforcement initially, the Border Patrol. But what poverty has always allowed, what always created this space where you can kind of, it is a perfect way to kind of send the foot soldiers into this drug business. And that's certainly true in Mexico. Poverty is a, you know, a great driver of this trade. But you know, there's also a very clear rule of law issue in Mexico. Corruption is central, and you know, back to your, you know, initial question, that the question of impunity is really central to what's happening in Mexico. You know, many would argue it's a kind of perfect storm of forces. It's poverty and inequality, corruption and impunity, coupled with a very strong demand for illicit narcotics in the United States.
Well, you know, another piece of that, I mean, we just got done doing an interview a few moments ago about how the minimum wage, low wage work sector is the fastest growing sector of employment in the United States. And what we're looking at is a situation in which there is so little opportunity. So when there's little opportunity, some people go into selling drugs, other people go into this low wage work and are self-medicating. And that's part of the reason people are using drugs in the first place.
You know, I think there's a reason why many of us are having this conversation about inequality now, you know, in cities and communities across the country, because that's really at the root of many of the kind of issues we're facing. Now, I don't think that that's the only reason why people get into the drug trade. Certainly when you're talking about the really powerful organized crime groups in Mexico, there's a whole other kind of level of factors working there. But I agree that we also need to have this conversation in the U.S. about public health and mental health and why people are turning to illicit narcotics in the first place. I think we're seeing the beginning of hopefully a more sophisticated conversation about narcotics and, you know, how to regulate certain types of narcotics, you know, in particular marijuana. We're seeing the decriminalization of that in certain states and certain areas. And I think part of what this documentary is trying to do is just show how, on a human scale, how people are living and how their stories are all kind of connected. They're pieces of this bigger puzzle that often doesn't get talked about. You know, sometimes they get talked about in isolation, but they're not often linked in the same story.
Now, the rancher Don Ford, who is definitely out of the drug trade now, and it's sort of amazing to hear him talking about how when he got into it, it was not a violent thing. People weren't armed. And he talks about the damage done by mandatory minimum sentence laws. He was caught and imprisoned just before that became the norm. What kind of damage do those laws do, and how is that part of the bigger picture of the drug trade?
It's one of the things that we see in the film is that, you know, right after Don was arrested for actually flying a small, he was in a small plane entering U.S. territory with a medium-sized amount of marijuana at the time. But as you said, he got in right before mandatory minimum sentencing laws went into effect. It kind of took away judges' discretion. And, you know, what Don saw afterwards were people just like him and usually, you know, young men of color, Latino and black men primarily, being incarcerated for very long sentences for small quantities of marijuana, whether for personal use or for selling. I mean, clearly the issue in the 1980s was around crack. It wasn't so much marijuana, but there were many kind of small-time offenders, nonviolent offenders, who were locked up for long, very long and extremely harsh sentences. And again, we're beginning to have this conversation where it appears like we're turning a corner. You know, there have been some good reporting on the release of at least 6,000 low-level offenders. So I think we're beginning to have a conversation in the country where we're looking at the harm that's been done by locking up people for long periods of time for something that at its root is really a public health issue and again, one of inequality.
We're talking to Bernardo Ruiz about his documentary Kingdom of Shadows, and I wanted to ask you, I mean, you were talking about your other film, Reportero, and what journalists go through in Mexico. Was it dangerous for you to make this film?
You know, I have, I always work with a very small crew, a very small and trusted crew, and I don't work with security. I don't believe that people can be intimate or open up in interviews or in delicate situations if you've got security with you. There's always a risk in doing these types of films, and I think there's a way in which they're even riskier when they're distributed because if you're pointing something out that the powerful forces, be they in organized crime or from a corrupt public official, you know, if you're bringing attention to something that they don't want, there's always that risk, of course. But what I would say is that, you know, and the same as in Reportero, I think the people who really deserve the most attention are the people who are living the situation day in and day out. And for that, I'd come back to Sister Consuelo Morales, who works in the city of Monterrey, working with families who've lost their loved ones. And, it's folks like her who really deserve more international attention. You know, she's not the only activist in Mexico. She's one of many. But people like her have, you know, labored invisibly in these corners of Mexico and haven't received the attention that they need internationally. Although I do think that that's changing. As a matter of fact, just a few days ago, Ambassador Samantha Power, U.S. Ambassador to the UN, just visited Monterrey and went and met with Sister Consuelo. I think in what is probably a growing recognition of her work. And, you know, I hopefully this film can be part of, you know, a way in which people get to know what she does a little bit better.
In your view, from what you've seen, I mean, you call it a perfect storm, and it really seems almost intractable. Is there anything that gives you a sense of hope, or do you see any strategy to move forward out of this incredible problem of drug cartels and violence? I mean, is it, you know, legalization of all drugs? What's your view on this?
For that, I am lucky to be able to speak to a lot of security experts and investigative journalists who've been covering this issue in a very deep way. And I don't think that any one of them believes that we're going to be able to flip a switch and end this conflict that has done so much harm. But some of the conversations that I think are interesting are when people talk about reducing harm in communities on both sides of the border. You know, clearly what many are saying needs to happen in Mexico is a strengthening of human rights. And that story is really embodied by Sister Consuelo and what she's doing. What she's doing is not taking up arms against the government. What she's actually doing is pushing the state government and public officials to do their jobs, which in Mexico is actually a radical thing, or at least parts of Mexico, it's a radical thing. So I think if there's a kind of small ray of hope, it's in people like Sister Consuelo who are pushing back. You know, the kind of other thing is there's a part in the film where we just see the faces of the families of the disappeared.
Yeah.
And to me, that kind of gets at the heart of the issue. So many different corners of Mexican civil society have suffered terribly, but the country is not bowed. You still see people, civil society, responding in big ways. I witnessed the one-year anniversary of the march around the student disappearance, and you saw a mass demonstration of people pushing back and demanding justice. You know, again, these aren't people who are overthrowing the government or are taking up arms. These are people clamoring for the existing institutions to work. And I think that's a necessary conversation. You know, what the other experts would say is on the U.S. side, we really need to have a serious public health conversation and talk about decriminalization. And I think many people have different perspectives. I think certainly Oscar Hagelseed, the federal agent in the film, is concerned about decriminalizing illicit and dangerous narcotics. And I think that's a perspective that's really worth listening to. Part of what I really wanted to do in this film is not go in with an agenda, but to really take people's stories and their perspectives at face value and really treat them respectfully. And that's part of what the film does. It's a braid of three very different perspectives. And what I want is to people to walk away with a deeper sense of what's happened both in the U.S. and Mexico over the last few years during this thing that, you know, that we call the drug war.
Bernardo Ruiz is writer and director of the film Kingdom of Shadows, which screens at 7 o'clock on Saturday, this coming Saturday, at the CCA, the Center for Contemporary Arts, as part of the one-day film festival American Dreams Border Realities, in honor of the 20th anniversary of Somos Un Pueblo Unido. And we look forward to seeing you there. I'm so glad you will make it to Santa Fe.
I'm really looking forward to it as well, and thank you so much for the invitation.
Thank you for being with us on the Radio Cafe.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to the podcast. To support the program, you can go to radiocafe.org. Many thanks to StudioX.com for their technical support and web design.